Blog Talk Radio.
If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, who still questions the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer.
Brown Sugar Radio is the food for your soul, enriching lives with many possibilities. We embrace and uplift our community with love, laughter, and inspiration. Today, I encourage you to keep learning, keep smiling, but most of all, keep striving to make your dreams come true. It's time to believe in yourself and walk into your new journey. Buckle your seatbelts for another exciting segment on the hottest urban show on the internet. It's time to get up, Brown Sugar Radio Lord listeners. We've got work to do.
Well, work to do indeed. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. We are in the building. Welcome back to another exciting segment on the hottest show on Blog Talk Radio. It is your show host, Brown Sugar. And today we have a phenomenal guest that will be joining us shortly. I am so excited. We have a long history together, this individual and I. He has supported Brown Sugar Radio countless times, not only by calling in, but bringing some of the baddest guests on Brown Sugar Radio. He has managed some phenomenal entertainers in the music industry, such as, are y'all ready for this? Get ready for this, okay? Yin Yang Twins, yes, Petey Pablo, okay, Miss Dade, I love Miss Dade, I wonder how is she doing, y'all, we got to have her back on the show. Miss Dade actually did a video with Bow Wow, and she's so cute, just absolutely adorable, but he has just really done some phenomenal things, and not only has he managed the top of the top, okay, but he has generated over $100 million in revenues for companies such as Uptown Records, Rough House Records, BMG, and Tommy Boy Records. You know, he's also just collaborated in 2009 with Lil Flip, worked on a project with him. He's also managed the Nappy Roots. I mean, just the list goes on and on and on and on. So, I mean, I like to call him Q. That's what many of you hear me refer to him as in some of the archive segments. But Quayshawn Carter has a phenomenal story, and I wanted to get it out there because many of you are probably, especially my loyal listeners who've been back with Brown Sugar Radio since day one, many of you have often asked, you know, what does it take to be successful? What does it take to make my dreams come true? Well, Quayshawn has the answer. He was definitely one that had a tremendous amount of drive, a huge ambition, and a force to be reckoned with as far as rolling with some of the heavy hitters in the music industry. But what makes his story even that much more interesting is the fact that he had got into some trouble with the law years ago and decided to turn himself in. And so we're going to discuss that. And I believe this is Mr. Carter on the line now.
Hello there. How's everything going?
How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm free, so I'm good.
I know. I was trying to fill my listeners in a little bit of your history there. And I'm like, you know, we go way back. It's been a minute, but we have really been in contact like over the last few years, you know, networking and just cross-promoting and doing what we have to do for one another. So I had to show this brother some love today because his story is just phenomenal when you hear what he has to say. Thank you for coming to the show, Quayshawn. I appreciate you coming.
Oh, man, thank you for having me. You know, anytime you do your radio show, I try my best to come through and share as much knowledge as I can.
Absolutely. You know, and the one thing, being in the music industry, you know, people look at it from the outside, and you think you got it going on as far as, and don't get it twisted now, listeners, majority of what you see, it does look flashy cars, glamorous lifestyle, you got the money, you got the power, you have the fame, okay? But at the end of the day, you know, one of your goals as a CEO is to continually look for new talent and to make sure that, you know what I mean, you got your A-game type, which you have been working with some of the absolute A-list in the business. But my question to you is, if you had to do it all over again, would you do anything differently considering what you've been through?
Most of it, probably not. I'd probably do it all the same way. And the reason why I say that is because even the bad decisions I made those decisions for, in my mind, good reasons. That if I was in that situation again, I'd probably have to make the same decision. You know, sometimes life and the system don't work in your favor, and you know, for the sake of family and the well-being of children, you do what you got to do. So,
right.
You know, that's what I did. In terms of the music business,
right.
I mean, I really wouldn't change much either because I've had the blessing of 20 business. I've been a part of some of the biggest projects. I've been a part of some of the most successful artists. I've been in the company of legendary executives. And, you know, there might be a couple things I probably have done different. Like, you know, I was in a partnership once before I started this label. I probably wouldn't do that again. For the most part, so, yeah, I wouldn't change a thing, man. It's been a great ride.
You know, I think that one of the most important qualities that you possess is the fact that you are so real with how you come forth with everybody. And that's why you and I connected, because you put aside all the nonsense and you're like, sugar, this is what it is. This is what I'm dealing with. But this is, you know, me. This is who I am. And I love the fact that you just keep it 100. And so, I mean, I want to get into as far as you, you know, the day that you decided, look, I'm tired of playing games. I really need to just go ahead and turn myself in. But before we get to that point, let's scoot back to the days that you decided this was your calling to work in the music industry. What was it that, you know, the light bulb, as they call it, the aha moment, that let you know this is where your place is in the music industry?
Man, you know, that really had a lot to do with my older brother. You know, my older brother, you know, he was a DJ, and he, you know, I was raised in hip-hop because of him and, you know, all of his friends who were, you know, old school. They were popular MCs and DJs in the old school era. I never made records, but as far as, you know, hip-hop as a culture was concerned in New York, you know, they were really, deeply entrenched into the hip-hop lifestyle. And I in turn, was raised in that hip-hop lifestyle. So I knew from when I was young that I wanted to do this music thing. I wanted to be a part of it. And then I was in this little rap group, TCK, we were called, and we did a show in the Bronx at the Kips Bay Boys Club. And that was like my first real experience of me rapping in front of an audience. And right then and there, I was hooked. I was like, "This, I got to be in this business. I want to do this.
This is it."
Yeah. Some way, somehow, I'm getting in.
Right.
And, you know, I did whatever I had to do to get in the business. You know, we're a little bit more fortunate because being in New York, all the record companies are here and most of the executives are here. So we have a little more of an opportunity, but it's still difficult because you got to know how to approach those people and how to get in front of them and get them to believe in you enough to want to invest in you.
Dang. And, you know, I think that, view on the music industry is the fact it's a tremendous amount of competition, and to me that seems like it would cause, you know, a lot of animosity. And I've always viewed it, I'm just going to keep it 100, Q. I feel like the music industry is a cutthroat business, you know, because it just seems as if everyone's trying to step on the other person to try to get ahead. But you working on the inside, you know, you could possibly shed some light to my listeners today as far as what do you believe that it takes, you know, to make it in the music industry? And, you know, does it set apart those that have integrity versus the ones that will just do anything, step on you, screw you over? You know what I mean? What's the reality of this business?
Man, this business is, it's like a private club. And it's like a very small community eating off of a very big pie. And because they're eating off of a big pie, they don't want to share that with anyone. You know what I'm saying? So they're not really even trying to let you in. And if you get in, you got to be invited in. So it's almost like a, you know, like a mafia-style family. Like, you got to be invited in or referred in or walked into this business, you know, into that club, so to speak. And then you can, you know, have an opportunity to take your part in that piece of the pie. But you've got to fight for that piece, even once you're in. So, you know, it's real tough, man. This is a real difficult business to get into because there's no real book anywhere that you can just go. Like, you want to be a stockbroker, you can go and study for your license, go work at a firm, and, you know, somebody will really guide you up. And there's, you know, all these regulatory issues that are easy to kind of keep the business overall regulated, the industry overall. Whereas in the music business, there's no regulatory industry. It's almost like being in a dope game. Like, you just got to get in it to learn it, and you got to just kind of figure it out as you go along. So, you know, if you're not really bred to be an entrepreneur, if you're not bred to be a hustler, this is probably not the business for you, you know?
And I think that one of the most impressive facts about you is the fact that I had actually wrote this in my show format about you, and the information to promote your show is that, you know, you really have a true ambition. You know, you have that hardcore hustle mentality, and that to me separates the good from the great in regards to just really focusing on what it is you want to achieve and you going for it. You know, not only just going for the goal, but, I mean, you went above and beyond to work with some of the top artists that are legendary in the music industry today. And so how did you come across, you know, as far as working with the Yin Yang Twins and Petey Pablo? I mean, you just had some awesome, even Little Flip, the project you did with him in 09. Do you believe that it was a divine connection, or, you know, is it something that, you know, God put within you to just be able to just have that ability to attract these type of people?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think that everything is divine destiny. You know, people that are in this business are meant to be here. You know, this is, and I say it to everybody, this is a dirty, nasty, slimy, grimy business, but if you love music, it's where you belong. So there are just people that from divine destiny are meant to be in this business. And then there are those people who are blessed enough that they're meant to succeed in this business because they've been given, you know, kind of like certain character tools and traits that allow them to be able to not just maneuver through the industry but be successful at it. And, again, it goes back to, like I said, you got to be a hustler, man. You got to be an entrepreneurial-minded person in order to really get into this business and succeed. And, I mean, you have to have that kind of hustler mentality engraved in you that you could go to any industry and succeed, not just music. You know, but along with that, like I said, there's just that divine destiny that you're meant to be in music of all the industries you could have went to with those same character tools and been successful at. You know, I'm a perfect example. Like, I actually had a Series 7 license to be a stockbroker, and I probably could have been a good stockbroker. But, you know, music was where my heart was. And every time I tried to walk away, something, you know, it's like when you think of the Godfather movie, when Al Pacino says, every time I try to get out, they keep pulling me back in. And that's kind of like what I went through. Like, anytime I tried to walk away or take a break, I was right back in it. You know, I've never fully left the music business ever because it would never let me leave it. You know, it's like my mistress. It's my Everything, you know.
Okay. Your heartbeat, all that, huh?
Yeah.
You know, Q, the thing that I want to ask you, as a CEO of your own record label, what would you say a up-and-coming artist need to be aware of when they're selecting a label?
I'd say two things. One, obviously the label has to have some track record of, in terms of relationships and resources, distribution, and so on. But number two, they've got to get it. You know, just taking a deal because, you know, you offered a lot of money from one company and they seem like they're rolling out the red carpet is, you know, is not necessarily, it may seem like a good deal on the surface, but if they really don't get the picture of what you are and what you're trying to present to the consumer, it's not going to work out. And there's plenty of artists who have been victims of that, where they might have had one label that didn't have much money, but they had the right idea as far as the vision and the direction of the artist and where they needed to go career-wise. And then instead they went to a bigger company and got more money up front, but the company didn't get it, and the whole situation fell apart because that vision wasn't there, the correct vision. And so I think that that's the most important thing, you know. At the same time, you don't want to go to a record company that has the vision but has no ability to carry the vision out. So it has to be some kind of balance in between the two when you pick a label.
And see, the thing that I find with most artists, you're right, they look at the money. You know, they're like, okay, such and such is going to sign me. I got this $2 million deal, so I'm going to go where the money's at. But then they lose a part of, and this is just based upon previous interviews I've done with celebrities that have signed record labels. A lot of them are going independent now, and it just seems as if, like, they felt they were, okay, the money was there, but then they lost who they were. They lost their own identity. The label controlled them. The label made them who they really weren't, is an often complaint that I find. And I like your sincerity. You know, you have the ability to take an artist, such as I love Miss Dade County, and just enhance who she is, not take away or put up a false image of who
right.
that artist truly is.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, when I came up in the music business when I was young, you know, 20 years ago, that's the way the majors worked also, you know. And it did because of the great artists that came out from the Rolling Stones, Whitney Houston, you know, Brian McKnight, to just every big artist at that time, even from the Uptown era when we developed Mary and Jodeci and Hev and, you know, Lost Boys, and then obviously going on to the early days of Bad Boy, you know, it was just a scenario where the major label really spent time developing artists. It was a whole department devoted to artist development. And, you know, that doesn't exist anymore in record companies. So, you know, independency seems to be the way to go, and I think it is, but, you know, you have to be very careful when you go independent too, because the whole point of an independent deal is that the record company is not going to do anything for you. You have to now do all of the artist development, the promotions and marketing and radio. You kind of, that's on your shoulders and responsibility to do it, because you're getting the majority of the money per record being sold. So if you don't have the financial or relationship resources to make the project work, it's going to be tough to do it independently. So it's like a catch-22. When an artist is looking for a deal, you know, the whole point of you getting a deal is that you're broke. And, you know, you can't go to an independent and sign a deal that's with you being broke, because you don't have the money to do what needs to be done. So what if you're not trying to go into a frontline deal situation, and now you're at the mercy of the record company. And in this day and age, that's tough because, again, you know, like you said, you have plenty of artists who are examples that got offered $1 million deal, $2 million deal, and they just really didn't realize what they were signing themselves into, you know, and they end up not working out because the record company, you know, they have a very standardized way of doing things, you know, and how they gauge things. So everyone gets the same amount of marketing and promotions in the beginning, and they look at the first quarter sales and the first quarter tracking of your BDS and your media base, which is the companies that track your radio play. And if they have already projected where they think the record should be in terms of sales and radio support, within that 3-month time period, if you haven't reached that goal, then the amount of support decreases. And it keeps decreasing every quarter in order of priority over who is translating. So you're in this, that's where the real competition takes place in this business. You know, as far as selling records are concerned, there really isn't a competition on the consumer level, because if a consumer wants your record, they're going to buy it. It doesn't matter if they, if there's five other artists that, you know, that they also want to buy, they'll buy all five, you know.
Yeah.
So the competition really takes place in-house, in the record company, where everyone's competing to be the priority to get the full support of the distribution company.
You know, an interesting fact that you just said is the fact that, you know, with most artists, they kind of feel like, you know, they're not, you know, the record company, they'll select what single should be released, or they may look at it and say, this should, you know, be the next single, blah, blah, blah. And I remember I was listening to Beyonce, and I think it was her very first album that she had released, and she was saying how what the record label looked at, but they were listening to her songs, and they're like, that's not going to be a hit, that's not going to be a hit. You know, just pretty much downing her entire album.
Right.
And she was, you know, adamant about, listen, just give it a try. I would like to release this. And not only did she have one hit, but 5 or 6 hits off of her very first solo album. And I thought that was interesting that she stood up for herself as an artist, you know, to really push and say, listen, I know this is what my fans want to hear. How does a record label know when to take that risk and say, because thank God they did. Could you imagine how her label said, no, we're not releasing it. It's a wrap. We wouldn't have had Baby Boy. We would not have had, you know what I'm saying, just some of the great hits on her very, very first album that were released that are now, like, iconic. How does a record label know when to take that risk?
I think a lot of that had to do with Uptown Records and Andre and Jimmy Jenkins and all the great guys at Uptown Records, because even though they were with MCA and MCA didn't kind of see the vision, Andre did, and so did Jimmy Jenkins, who was the head of promotions at the time. And, you know, they knew that it was the right choice in the records. So, you know, Mary fought hard, and but she had the support of Uptown with that fight, so that's why it made it work. And, you know, again, As an imprint label, you have to be prepared to fight for what you believe in. I mean, that's what we did when we promoted the Fugees. And Columbia, you know, we told them Killing Me Softly was the record, and they really didn't think it was. They were like, no, that record's not it. We're going to go with Outlaws. And we were telling them, nah, I'm telling you, Killing Me Softly. They were like, no rapper's ever had a successful R&B record, especially a remake of a Roberta Flack record. Like, you know, and, you know, we didn't listen to them. We took the record to Funk Flex, Funkmaster Flex at Hot 97 in New York, and Flex broke the record, and the rest was history. You know, when we did a video for Killing Me Softly, the budget was only $25,000 because the record took off so quickly, they didn't have time to put a budget together. Now, when you look at the second single, Ready or Not, the budget for that video was $1.1 million. So you see that we have made the right choice, but we took that into our own hands. We didn't leave it to the record company to make a bad decision. And that's the other issue with most record with most artists in small labels, is that when they'll go to the major, they're so used to this ideology that the record company is going to do everything, that even when they make a bad decision, they go with the bad decision. Sometimes you have to be on point enough with your business and your vision that you got to know, like, okay, they're making the wrong decision. We need to do something about this. And that also comes into play when you get your budget money. You know, most guys, when they get a record company to get an advance and they get a budget, you know, they spend it on jewelry and cars and things that have nothing to do with nothing at the end of the day. They're just material things. Instead of saying, okay, well, let's put $10,000-$15,000 in the bank and leave it there, and that's just margin of error or emergency money. So that when you're in a situation where this is the right record and they're telling you it's not the right record, you can take your $10,000-$15,000 in emergency money and invest it into your what you believe is the right record. You know?
That's wisdom right there. Yeah, you know? Now, you mentioned Whitney Houston earlier, and with the passing of a legendary, iconic diva, what were your thoughts when you first found out that Whitney had passed, and have you ever had the opportunity to meet her?
Oh, yeah, she was a friend of mine. I mean, you know, I've known Whitney for some years. you know, obviously because her career took her in different directions and I went into, you know, I haven't seen her in some years, but, you know, I considered her and Bobby, I consider all them friends or good, close industry acquaintances. Whitney Houston is the greatest singer of our generation, hands down. There's no one that could do what Whitney did vocally. Whitney not only spoke to you, but she actually touched your heart and soul with her voice. And I have yet to hear anyone, no matter how powerful their voice has been, not Mariah, not Christina, not...
Jennifer Hudson.
No, not anything. She not... I mean, Jennifer Hudson's good, but...
She not no Whitney, huh?
You know, very few people. I mean, Celine Dion, that's what I'm thinking of. You know, Celine Dion, these women with these powerful, powerful voices couldn't even compare to do what Whitney did. Like, Whitney... It's just, it was like you could feel all of her emotion when she sang. You knew exactly, like, the way her voice and her facial expression, everything was expressed in her sound. And then on top of that, to have such a perfect tone. Like, she had the absolute perfect tone and perfect voice. You know,
yes,
it's a shame
did.
That it deteriorated so much because of, you know, the drug use and, the turmoil in her life. But she... was by far, no one can do what she did vocally, and no one probably ever will again.
You know, and I think that's one of the saddest things about Whitney is the fact that she did have what was known as the voice. You know, it was an American symbol. It was the thing that made us proud to have, not only as an American, but a black woman, you know, that was killing the pop chart. And R&B charts and just really bringing it. And I felt a connection to Whitney, you know, and I think that one of the most amazing qualities that she had was the ability to look you in your eyes. I mean, I'm on TV, looking at her on TV, I felt like I was one of her closest girlfriends, the way she was so intimate with her fans, the way that she really truly just made you feel. So when you talk about emotion and her singing and her songs, it was ministry for myself. And a lot of the ups and downs she had went through in her life, you know, most people can relate to as far as being taken advantage of or just going through various situations we deal with. But I'm so heartbroken, you know, about Whitney, and I just felt that it was really unfortunate that we lost her. And I want to ask you, as far as being an artist, being a CEO of a record label, looking for new talent. One thing people always say is the fact that Whitney was a true vocalist, and I've said it a million times. What we have today is a lot of entertainers, not really true vocalists. A lot of people, they can dance, they can get up there, and they can do backflips. They may be able to wear the hottest clothes. Or, you know what I'm saying? It's a lot of entertaining going on. But how hard is it to find a true vocalist nowadays that can truly just sing, to entertain us just with their instrument of their voice, not with all the extra?
It's next to impossible, only because that's not what the audience is looking for. You know, at the end of the day, the consumer really controls and dictates the course of music, whether they realize it or not, you know, because a record company is only going to put out what the consumer is willing to spend money and buy. Record companies are not in the business of making sounds, so to speak. They're in the business of selling records. So whatever that sound is that the consumer says that they want, that's what they're going to get. And until the consumer decides that they want that type of talent, then the music industry will start looking for that type of talent. And that's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah, yeah. You know, well, I know I can count on you to give us the truth. So, you know, I'm just coming at you. I want to know, because I'm sure the listeners, too, want to absolutely find out what is it, you know,
yeah,
what
I
does
mean,
it take?
You know, it's crazy because I hear people all the time say, oh, the record companies and radio, they're manipulating the music. And it's like, no, they're not necessarily manipulating the music because, you know, all the songs go through the same process. And, yeah, there are some advantages to artists that are signed from unsigned artists. But if you got a record and it's a hit is a hit. No one's going to turn a hit record away. And what determines a hit is the consumer. You know, there are plenty of things that I don't like or didn't like that were big hits. And there were plenty of records that I did like that, you know. So, you know, as an executive, you get to a point where you have to put aside your personal opinion of a record and just look at it from the strictly business point of view. Will the consumer buy this? Is the current sales demographic listening to this type of music? And will they give this type of music a chance if they're not? And that's the questions we got to ask ourselves. And if the answer to those things is no, then guess what? I'm not putting that record out, because at the end of the day, I'm in the business of selling records.
Yeah, that's real talk, you know. It is certainly a business, and, you know.
Yeah. Bills got to get paid. Life's got to stay on. Employees got to get their salaries. Taxes got to get paid. All those things got to still be done, irregardless of if I sell records or not. So the more records I sell, the more I am able to, you know, handle my debt responsibilities as a company. You know,
right.
So.
Makes sense to me, you know. So let's get into, okay, as far as after you were at the all-time prime of your career, you know, making money, handling business, as we earlier discussed, and you decided due to an offense you had made, was it when you were a teenager or was this like your young adulthood that you had got caught up in? Let's,
it was 2002.
Let's get into that.
I just got to a point where, you know, the hands that control the companies change, and when those things change, my ability to get business and make money changed, because the people I were doing business with were no longer in positions of authority or control. So, you know, you get to a point where no money's coming in, and it's hard to go from making a lot of money to making no money.
Uh-huh.
And then when you're not thinking that it's ever going to end, and you're not saving and conserving your finances the way you should be, as responsibly as you should, you know, you find yourself in a situation where now your money's running out and you start getting desperate. And, you know, like I said, I was one of those guys, man, I make no bones about my mistakes. You know, I tried to go and do other things work-wise, and it just, I kept running back to music. And, you know, so it got to a point where I'm just stuck in a situation where lights is off, you know, getting evicted. I need to make some money right away. So, you know, I'm mad at the world. I mean, I didn't even go lie. I actually went to social services to get help, and they told me I wasn't poor enough because the year before I had made, you know, too much money.
Mm.
And I wasn't poor enough to get help. So I was so angry. I was mad at the world. I was mad at the system. I was mad at everybody. I was mad at God, you know.
Yeah.
So I did the other thing I know how to do well, and that's how I hit the streets and hustle. So,
okay.
You know, I started selling drugs and, you know, in Pennsylvania and some other places. And, you know, I started making money. And I seemed to be pretty good at it. I started making a decent amount of money, like a lot of money. And, you know, me and my crew from the Bronx, you know, did what we did. And then, you know, I happened to be passing through Jersey. And then that come at a time where, you know, I had things that started getting back on track musically, and, you know, business is picking back up. And I got to a point where I'm like, okay, I don't want to do this no more. I'm going to get back to this music thing full time, because you can't do both. And the minute I took my mind completely off hustling and put it back on music, I made a stupid mistake and got jammed up. But, you know, me being a New Yorker, I'm like, Jersey, I'll kick rocks. I went on the run, head back to New York, and for 8 years I was a fugitive from justice. Yeah, and that's during that time that I worked with Bone Thugs and Harmony, with managing Lazy Bone's wife Felicia, working with May, and, you know, managing Yin Yang Twins, and then, you know, managing Nappy Roots, and, you know, working with PD, and, you know, all those great things I did, and put out the Flip Project, you know, as an independent. You know, I did all those things while I was a fugitive. You know what I'm saying?
That's a trip. So what was it that made you decide, you know what, enough is enough. I'm tired of running from the law. I'm fed up. I'm going to turn myself in. That had to be a very difficult decision.
Yeah, it was very difficult. But, you know, it was what I had to do. You know, it had been 8 years, and I really was just kind of tired of running, you know. I was tired of having to look over my shoulder. You know, I was tired of going on the road, and every time I'm getting in a car, it's like, yo, you know, is anything this, anything that? Every time, you know, I'm on a stage or somewhere, and, you know, there's police officers. You know, you worry about all those things. You know, especially because you're around artists that smoke weed and, you know, they do all these different things. And, it, you know, we're enabled in this business. Like, it's funny because you see a lot of rappers go to jail for smoking weed and people on the outside say, man, they stupid. They're supposed to know better. It's like, yeah, but y'all don't see the other side when you're at a show and there's police officers watching you smoke weed. And they're like, I don't see nothing. You know, just don't do it in front of me. You know, you enabled us. And that's because they're off duty and they're getting paid as a security guard and they don't want to mess up being hired back by those, you know, they make more money there than they do as police officers, putting their life on the line. So,
that's,
you know, a lot
crazy.
Of times these guys, when they see a cop, you know, and they got weed in their hand, they don't toss it because they're so used to cops not caring. You just happen to catch that cop that cares.
Wow.
But anyways, you know, so for 8 years I lived like that, like on the run, like always having that in the back of my mind, like today could be my day. What if I walk near and these police, some officers see me and, you know, my face was somewhere. They saw me on, you know, police periodically check the warrants and see who's where and last known addresses and who's around just to try to catch somebody as a fugitive because that's a stripe in their badge so that they can move up and get their detective licenses. You don't even know what's going on, you know. So it just got to a point that I was just tired, you know. And I was supposed to go to the VMAs that Thursday. It was a Tuesday, September 9th of 2010. I was supposed to leave that Thursday to go to L.A. for the VMAs, and instead I walked into the 47th Precinct in the Bronx, and I turned myself in.
Boy, that's something else, I tell you. But, you know, at least, like you said, when you first came on the air, you're free now.
Oh, yeah.
So at least, you know what I mean?
You know,
you're free. You don't have to worry about any of that anymore.
Well, kind
of. You know?
I'm still on parole until September, but I'm almost done. And when I finish this early parole I got, you know, I'm completely free. Then I'll have my full freedom back. And the first thing I'm going to do is throw a party in Vegas.
That's right, okay? You call me when you get out here.
Oh, yeah, I'm on the first day.
Okay.
Smoking. When I'm in the
courtroom, right.
and the judge says you have completed, you know, your parole, do you have anything to say? I'm be like, yes, goodbye. I'm
sure,
like, I'm
gone. Wow, well, I mean, the burn, that's a trip. You something else. You ain't changed a bit. The burning question most of my listeners want to know is, what does it take to truly succeed in the music industry? You know, as an artist, what is it that they need?
First and foremost, you have to have a hit record. There's no way around that. You know, if you don't have a hit record, you got to have some serious talent. You have to have, and it can't just simply be singing ability. You've got to have some type of performance ability. You've got to have some kind of stage presence. You've got to have some type of star quality, some it factor. Then you've got to have a strong team around you. You've got to have a team of people that are A, knowledgeable, and B, supportive in really trying to help you get to where you need to go. Because, you know, you can have a great manager who you're just another check to them, and the relationship's is not going to work out for long. The next thing you got to have is you just got to have patience. You know, so it takes a long time. Some artists take them 10 years before they get to where they're meant to be. And you just got to have patience, and you have to have realism. You have to be realistic with yourself. You have to make sure that everybody around you is realistic with you. You don't want to have yes men around you that tell you everything you do is hot and you know it's not, you know. You need to hear all those things, because if you're honest with yourselves about what you have, then it makes you, you're better equipped to go to war. You know, because this is like a war, you know what I'm saying? It's like going to battle. You're going to battle to sell records. And, you know, you don't want to go into a war with the wrong intel. You know, think about it like when the soldiers went to get Osama. If they had improper intel, the Marines would have got killed and Osama would have got away. You know, so they had to make sure that their intel, that their knowledge of the terrain, of the situation, of what they're dealing, and was exact so that their strategy would be correct. And you have to do the same thing with this. You know, you have to make sure that the people around you are knowledgeable in their various areas and fields of industry, so that your strategy of how you're going to break this music to the market is the right way. You know, it's the right strategy. You know, if you got those things, man, you'll be fine. And then just don't be thirsty for the money, man. Don't chase money. Chase the goal. Like, you get that little bit of advance check, put something away for a rainy day. You know, put some money out of the budget away to make, you know, to kind of as emergency money, like I said earlier. And, you know, just be prepared to pull up your pants and grind. Like to me, I don't see if an artist gets $20,000, you should be able to live off that for a year because you was doing it when you worked at McDonald's before you got the deal.
Yeah,
you know
I agree.
You made it work. So when you get that $20,000 advance, make it work.
That's it.
You know?
That's it. You know, you're right. The thing is, with you being a season, you know, that in the industry, you'll be able to, you know, shed some light on the up-and-coming artists or executive producers, CEOs, whatever, because at the end of the day, this type of industry, what I'm finding, you're going to have your ups and you're going to have your downs. But all you're saying is you need to prepare yourself when the downs come.
Absolutely.
You know?
Even for
that's
the
it, that's all.
I mean, the uptime is a dangerous time because it gives you the illusion that everything's going to stay this way. So you have to be prepared to deal with that with humility. You know, when you get caught up in that moment and you get caught up in the success and you don't really stay grounded, you could get lost in that success.
Yeah, that's true. You're very, 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 very 100% on that one. And I think that, you know, majority of the people that are listening today can truly respect and appreciate where you're coming from because, you know, at the end of the day, you're the one, you have to live with the choices and the decisions that you make. And being that you've already been there, done that, might as well go ahead and put it out there and teach us what not to do. And so I appreciate you for coming on the air today. We got to go ahead and end here shortly, but I'm enjoying what you're saying, and certainly I know my listeners are too. And any final thoughts, what is it that you would like to get out there in regards to, you know, just your life, your legacy, and all that you've worked hard for over these last, you said, 22-plus years in this music industry?
Now, one legacy I want people to know is that I cared. I cared enough to give my all, and I gave my all to this business. I gave my all to, you know, for everyone to see. I've made myself an open book, and I've shared as much, you know, knowledge and wisdom as I could. And I'll keep doing so. So I want to be remembered for the one guy that cared. You know?
That's
and,
it.
As long as you remember
and
me for that.
And we see that.
Yeah. As long as you remember me for that, then all the success that we have was well worth it.
That's it. Okay. That's it. That's all. You, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have Q back probably next month or soon, within the next couple of months, because he is looking for the next up and coming star to do some great things with him, with his record label. Let's talk a little bit about that in regards to you looking for the next best talent. That's going to be awesome when we host that show. And I'm even thinking about holding some live auditions. What you think? Maybe having people call in and sing for you?
It'd be great. My thing is, if it's hot, I want it, you know. We're not trying to be a hip hop label or a rock label or a pop label. We just want to be a record label. So I want to put it on.
Okay.
If it's country music and it's hot, I want it. You know, if it's Latin music and it's hot, I want it. You know, I want to be a part of music overall. And, you know, shout-outs to EMI for being my distributor and regardless of me being incarcerated, staying my distributor, so which is a rare thing. You know, usually labels get dropped when their executives, you know, take a little vacation, and EMI stayed with me. So shout-outs to them for that. That's it.
Wow. All right. Well, Q, thank you so much for joining us today on Brown Sugar Radio. Definitely got to have you back. We need to do the voice, it would be, because certainly you would not be able to actually see their physical appearance. But I think that would be nice, just to have them come on and sing.
You got your online thing, too, so they can send pictures in. They can email me.
There you go.
You know, QRecords@gmail.com, which is QUE Records@gmail. Look me up on Facebook. It's at Quayshaun, QUAYSHAUN, and I'm also on Twitter. You know, I'm easy to find. You know, I'm around.
All right.
Just Google.
That's it. That Google you. All right, Q. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Brown Sugar Radio today.
All right. Thank you for having me.
All right. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, definitely keep it locked because we'll be back in the next few months and we will have the voice.
your talent, being able to display it here live on Brown Sugar Radio. We'll be back on next Thursday. Tune in, and you know we always got some nice topics going. The quote that I would love to give you today is, if you're absent during my struggle, don't expect to be present during my success. That was a quote from Will Smith. I love it. All right, well, thank you for tuning in to Brown Sugar Radio, where entertainment is extraordinary. Make it a fact.